Community Conversations with Community Centres SA. Here's Kerry Ackermans.
We all know the importance of great governance, but for not-for-profits, sadly, there's often a gap. Serving on a board, particularly for a not-for-profit board, it's one of those things we all love to have on our resume and we also feel good about doing. We're going to be talking today to Raphael Goldsworthy from Better Boards about how much information is out there and what help you could be getting to improve the governance of your board. Welcome to the podcast, Raphael.
Thank you for having me, Kerry. It's wonderful to be here.
Tell us how you got into boards. Did you become a board member and then had an interest to improve how boards can perform?
No. My father has been in the board space for over 40 years now, and so it's a bit of a family connection. And so many years ago, he said to me, oh, I'm organising this conference. Could you run it for me? Because at the time, I was doing design events and a design magazine. And he said, oh, can you run this just for 6 months just to help us get it going? And ever since then, that 6 months is now 17 years.
A long time. Now, Raphael, we all know the value of being a director and being on a board, but the onus on a not-for-profit board is actually far higher than what it is for a commercial for-profit board.
I would say if you're talking about a company limited by guarantee, or even an association or a corporate board, the onuses are all not dissimilar. It's just that as a not-for-profit director, you often take that on in an unremunerated capacity. And also many not-for-profits can come with substantial risks around being a board member if they're not governed correctly.
And of course, they're subject to all the same fiduciary duties as a for-profit organisation.
That's correct.
So, Raphael, what have you seen and why did you develop Cat Herder? And let's talk about your product, Cat Herder.
So Cat Herder was actually developed in South Australia by a wonderful couple who in 2013, I believe they released it, and they got it going. And what they saw was that the space was crying out for a product like Cat Herder that wasn't $25,000, $30,000 a year. They wanted something that was cost effective for the small boards that they worked with. In 2017, the company I work for, Better Boards, we acquired it from the couple in South Australia who really wanted a home where they knew it would be looked after and their clients would be looked after. At Better Boards, we've been going since 2011. Before that, we were around in another form as well. And we work exclusively with not-for-profit boards and executives around helping them master the art of the boardroom. So they really wanted somewhere that would be, you know, would live on and it would really be not just sort of fold into sort of a private equity group or something like that.
So when you say to improve, where do you see that not-for-profit boards need to improve? What are the core areas?
I think it's really dependent on the board. Every board is different. I describe boards a little bit like fingerprints. Everybody has a fingerprint, just like every company has a board, and we operate within the same structures. But what we see is that each board is a little bit unique, just like we have unique fingerprints. I think that the big issues that we see today with boardrooms of any kind is we're seeing the feeling of more complexity. It's not necessarily more complex, but it feels that way for sure. The world feels like it's moving at a greater speed. I think we see that regulators and the general public have higher expectations around boards. I think there's an increasing interest in boards around, you see more in the media, and that drives interest from the general public. But we see increasing duties and liabilities. 5-10 years ago, cybersecurity was just not really on anyone's radar. Today, it's front and center. And we see the upcoming privacy principle changes from the government that will drive greater duties and responsibilities around that. It's maybe not necessarily that they are any bigger, but it definitely, I think, feels to a lot of people who are on board that they are bigger. And then we have all the traditional perennial issues around power, politics, personalities, biases, all those people dynamics that we see in the boardroom that are really, you know, we need to recognize that our boards are full of people. We're all human, and all those dynamics come in, and then we layer on all these other regulatory and other challenges and just the commercial realities of running organisations. I think you get a really interesting mix of challenges depending on the organisation. For example, we see in the aged care and disability, you've got increasing regulation and really serious commercial challenges, whether you're for-profit or not-for-profit, that drive a lot of sort of board decision-making and behaviours and are also driving a lot of change in the sector. But I think a change in the boardroom as we go, oh, we've got to grapple with all these new challenges, commercial realities, but we've also got to grapple with all these things like cybersecurity and how do we bring tech expertise into our boards and things like that. a way that makes sense.
Interesting when you say about that technical expertise. I think the composition of the board, that makeup of who was actually on the board, it used to be your obligatory accountant, then you might have a lawyer, then you have somebody with the technical expertise. But it's so much more important, particularly for not-for-profits, to drive funding into the organisation to look at some more of those compliance aspects than we've ever had to look at before. And now also there's a push to have lived experience. And often for people with lived experience, it's very hard not to just focus on the personal experience and let some of the more commercial aspect. But there's that great saying, you might be not-for-profit, but you're not for loss either.
For sure. And I think that that's the challenge, is that the traditional way that we would cope with some of these issues was to add more people to the board. It was easy to go, we'll add someone with a skill set. We've reached the point where it's really impractical. And so we need to leverage our subcommittees more and task forces and other groups like that that link and push up to the board and report to the board, but they don't necessarily, we're not necessarily adding all these people to the board. It becomes sort of a wider group and network of advisors. That comes with risks. We don't want to have, you know, shadow directors, for example, popping up where they're not really directors, but they're making decisions and influencing too heavily. But we need to strike a balance, I think, there, where how do we bring these people in? And how do we also figure out how to draw on a wider range of expertise than we can have in our boardroom? We see, and it's a bit hard to demonstrate, obviously, in audio, but when we have a group of two people, we have sort of that one-to-one relationship, and there's some really great graphics around this that show the graph aspect. You've got two people, and you draw a line between them, you've sort of got one. You have three, and then you've got three, and then you have five, and as you increase the number of people on the board, that network of relationships, even up to seven or eight people, gets quite complex. Off the top of my head, a group of seven would be 21 distinct relationships. And so that sort of complexity, if we start to go beyond seven, then we've got even more, and it's an exponential thing. And so there's more and more relationships to manage. So I think that instead of trying to stuff our boards full of new people with new expertise, is we try to figure out how to create more effective subcommittee structures and things like that to feed that knowledge into the board.
And of course, mandatory, we need at least four people on a board to meet requirements. That's a lot of people to find when today's people are short of time, they're worried about the risk, they've got their own payroll that they're doing. So it makes it very challenging. Rafael, do you think there's an opportunity to look at something like Boards Without Borders, where you might have a treasurer that would float between boards to look at the finances?
I think that's kind of what I would advocate for, in the sense of drawing on those extra people. But it would depend a little bit on what the actual arrangement would be from a liability point of view. And I'm not a lawyer, but I do know plenty of lawyers, and I think that is what they would highlight, is how does all the liability come with that? And is this person floating between, say, two organisations that are actually competitors or competing for the same funding or not, and things like that. So I think there's some dynamics there to explore, but I think it's an interesting idea, and definitely one that we've sort of seen in the space of people trying to think through, almost like you see in the commercial space with small businesses having things like fractional CFOs, so they're sort of paying for a sort of slice of their time, have them semi on call but not all the time. So I think with this change that we're seeing in the boardroom and, you know, the not-for-profit space, what we're starting to see is new models emerge. I had a discussion the other day with a lady out of Queensland, and they're looking at how do we build out advisory boards that can provide, similar to what you've described, it's that you don't just get one person, you get a whole advisory board of people that you can tap for the knowledge and expertise. Of course, there are risks that come with that also, around things like them being a shadow director, or, you know, what are their outside motivations or other things. But if it's done well, I think it can be very effective.
And of course, you just mentioned about these other skill sets. Boards really need to have marketing and comms people on their boards, and that's not been common before. You've never put a business development orientated person on a board.
No, I think for some time we've seen some of those things. I remember some years ago, a refugee organisation in Melbourne, they were bringing a journalist onto their board. It was something that at the time, this is actually almost 15 years ago now, at the time it was something that, you know, was a bit quite left of field. But I think as we move along, you know, in time, we see that that's becoming more common. It's really about figuring out what skills the board needs and doing those sort of skills assessments and figuring that sort of figuring out what is strategically aligned to our organisation. And I think that's one piece where sometimes board recruitment, whether it's not-for-profit or for-profit organisations, sometimes it's really easy just to say, oh, we need to put a bum on a seat. But often what we need to be thinking about is, all right, what's our strategic plan look like? What are the key strategic initiatives? How does the board align to that? Something that we promote and have been for some time is thinking about, how do you think about your board as a key asset for the organisation? How can it drive value, and how is the board aligned to where we want the organisation to go in the future? And I think, you know, that's a challenge for a lot of associations that are member-based, because often they have requirements around things like we need to bring our members into the boardroom, and often that's sort of how they're structured, whether it's like a real estate institute or something like that. It's often, well, we bring in all our members, and they're not particularly independent, and they don't sort of have that outside view. Equally as well, if we bring in too many people with an outside view, it can also dilute the sort of mission of the organization, because, you know, if you bring in someone just purely for their marketing expertise into an organization where they don't have a passion or a background, or sort of they're not willing to learn about that industry, then they're not necessarily able to align to sort of the broader vision, mission, values, goals and things that the organization has. So it is, I think, a tightrope to walk, and one that's really difficult when we have many people, they're just time poor, they don't have time. And we look at professionals, busy professionals these days, if they've got kids, you know, all the other things that they're doing, it can be clubs, all that sort of stuff can be very busy and hard to get the time carved out for being on the board. But I think a piece of that as well is looking further afield and thinking about how do we leverage technology to bring people into the boardroom. I think with COVID, we got a bit of a glimpse of how that might be, but I still see today, and was talking to a board last week, where they were recruiting and saying, well, no, we have to get someone from the local area. And it was like, well, why? And they did have some valid reasons for it, but equally too, it was like, but you're also hitting a wall because you can't find them. So maybe we really do need to seriously think about looking further afield and using technology, whether it's even a phone call, so the remote dialing, whether it's dialing with, you know, video, which are all probably a little bit over after COVID, but using those technologies to bring that skill set into your boardroom.
I'm talking to Raphael Goldsworthy from Better Boards about governance and boards, and particularly for not-for-profits. Raphael, you've made me think of many things, and then I've got several questions for you. I'm thinking about the information that's required for boards to make decisions. And is that where sometimes you don't need another board director? You could go out to focus groups. There's not enough information, and then people do need to read the papers as well as important. But often there's not the right information to make the decisions that need to be made.
Yeah, I think that can be true. And I think the flip side of that as well is that we're actually facing information overload for some things as well. We see it with board reports. Again, talking to a colleague recently, you know, one of the big challenges with board reports and directors making decisions isn't necessarily a lack of information. It's that when the board reports come in, they're too full. Mm-hmm. So stripping them down and getting really focused and really aligning them, the board reporting, and making it effective, so it's answering the questions the directors have, is a really critical piece to having a well-functioning board. Of course, not all not-for-profits have, you know, an exec team to be feeding that in that way, so then they possibly face that feeling of not having enough information. But the opposite side of it as well is that even in many not-for-profits is they've got the board reports, and it's just like the board packs hundreds of pages long, and it's like, what is the most important thing in here? How do I actually make a decision with too much information? So I think it's actually both things are a challenge, and they have different ways of dealing with that. But one of the most effective on both is establishing effective board reporting structures if your organisation is sort of that size.
And Raphael, you've just raised about the executive team. It can be a real challenge for the CEO, can't it, where they are trying to prepare what they think that the board needs. But then they may also have a board that is very operational and doesn't stay at that strategic overview.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely is one of those human dynamics issues that we've seen for years, you know, ever since I started. But even if you go back and read some of the material from some governance specialists from many years ago, Bob Garrett, very well-known writer, writes back in the 70s issues around conflicts of interest and other things like that, where they're perennial issues and they seem to never leave us. And definitely that one is around sort of the CEO feeling overwhelmed or not feeling like they're giving the board quite the right thing, or the relationship's out of whack, is definitely a really big piece. And I think the key piece there to solving that is often a chair-CEO relationship and building that, which obviously can be difficult sometimes. But equally too, sometimes the CEOs sometimes step up and just ask the board point blank, well, what do you want from me to give you? And if they're too operational, then that's also a piece for the CEO to say, hey, this is too operational, how can we lift up? And that's where I think events and going out and about in the world to see what other orgs are, going to conferences, listening to podcasts, whatever it might be, is really critical for directors to get a sense of like how strategic are we or aren't we, and where should we be trying to hit in terms of what's the right place to be at for our board and our organisation. It's really hard, I think, for many small organisations when the people who do the work and who are also the board, they're doing sort of both, and trying to switch that hat is really, really difficult. But I like to think of it as, you might be familiar with Edward de Bono's thinking hats, try and think of it in that sense, in terms of we take off one hat and we leave it at the door when we come to the board meeting. We need to shift into that space, and doing things at the beginning in a meeting to really try and frame that and bring it around is, you know, into that strategic sense is important. But I definitely think sort of getting out and getting more perspective can really help with that becoming more strategic and less operational. But what we definitely see is that every board believes it's not strategic enough in some capacity. A study, which I can't recall off the top of my head the name of it, but came out of the UK recently in the last couple of weeks, where they were asking board directors of a variety of different boards, is your board strategic enough? And over 40% of them said, oh, no, we're not strategic enough. But I think as well, the piece with that is often a question of, well, what does it actually mean to be strategic for our board and the situation that we find ourselves in?
And Raphael, you've mentioned about information education. It's so important, isn't it? Which, of course, what Better Boards does. But for a lot of not-for-profits, they can't send their directors out to AICD. And that's a real challenge. Talk to me about what Better Boards does in terms of offering that education around governance.
Yeah, sure. So www.betterboards.net is our website, which has hundreds of free articles and information on it for getting up to speed with governance and of all aspects, everything from, you know, that board reporting to conflicts of interest to minute taking and all the different bits that sit around it. So there's a whole raft of information there that's totally free. There's no cost to it. You can sign up to our newsletter, get it delivered to your inbox, and you'll get interesting new articles every couple of weeks. We also offer Better Boards Conference, which is coming up this June, which is in Sydney, and so that's another opportunity. And then we also have our BoardWise product, which is an online professional development platform that we've developed over many years, has over 150 hours of governance materials in it, and for about a sixth of the cost of an AICD course, you can have 8 board members on there using that and learning more about governance. And also comes with a board assessment piece, so you can tool set so that you can assess your board and sort of where they're at. And so I think, you know, that's just what we offer, but there's many others out there which I would give a shout out to. People might say, oh, they compete with you, but we're in the business of, you know, making sure that boards are better. And so we have our community, we have Future Directors Institute, we've got some of the various health ones, like there's a Victorian one. So there's all these different places that do provide governance education and training at varying levels and varying price points. And so, yes, AICD is considered to be sort of, you know, it's often held up as the gold standard, but it's not the be-all and end-all. And it's nice to have letters after your name, but, you know, for the cost that it is, sometimes it's better to see what else you can find that can actually get you the information you need to sort of uplift your board and bring it to the next level. It doesn't require doing thousands of dollars of coursework.
No, because it's the value in the information that counts, not the stamp that went with the qualification.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, I think if you were serious about, like, I want to be on commercial boards and get paid for it, then it's definitely a whole piece that a lot of people pursue. But if you're interested in getting more knowledge for yourself to bring back to your community organization, you know, maybe it's a club or maybe it's an association, a member association or something like that, there's no shortage of places out there you can get that information much cheaper and more cost effectively. And it's not super different. Like I said, boards are like fingerprints, sort of fit within the same framework. And to be honest, AICD also produces a huge volume of information that's totally free that you can review and use and bring your skill level up and your knowledge up.
Look, thank you very much for talking to us today about how to improve your board and governance within your organisation. Raphael, Better Boards, just give us that website so people know where to find you.
www.betterboards.net is us, or Better Boards on Google, I'm sure we'll get you there as well.
Been very informative. Really appreciate you coming on the podcast today.
Not a problem. Thank you so much for having me, Kerry. It was wonderful.
And thank you for listening and engaging with our community conversations today. Every week, we aim to bring you stories from far and wide, across South Australia and beyond. People who are game changers in our community, doing great work, plus general topics of community interest. If you have any subjects you think we should cover or any other feedback, please let us know at communitycentressa.asn.au. And feel free to share this podcast so we can engage more people in our next community conversation.
Community Conversations. For more information, check out communitycentressa.asn.au. www.asn.au.